Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, October 29th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient and accessible tools I've ever discovered or encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been gifted. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of this tool in their lives has provided a tremendous benefit. Sometimes they ask to be stepped through the worksheet process, so there are files there that can serve as a tutorial for anybody who's interested in learning how to use the process for themselves. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon and Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call at 563-999-3581 with their comments, questions, answers, testimonials. If you call that number and press 1, it puts a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. And we would be happy to have you do that. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. We are on the 302nd day of the year. Today's lesson simply reads, where darkness was, I look upon the light. Creator, our eyes are opening at last. Your holy world awaits us as our sight is finally restored and we can see the truth of your world. We thought we suffered, but we had forgotten the Son, capital S, Son, whom you created. Now we see that darkness is our own imagining and that light is there for us to look upon. The Christ mind's vision changes darkness into light, for fear must disappear when love has come. let me forgive your holy world today. In other words, let me remove any false perceptions that I have laid over your holy world, that I may look upon your world's holiness and understand that it simply reflects my own. Love awaits us as we go to the Christ mind, and it walks beside us, showing us the way. The Christ mind fails in nothing. The Christ mind is the end that we seek and the means by which we get there. So that's lesson 302 from the workbook in Course in Miracles. And the Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout, lesson 302 is titled, Today's Fortune. Anything you damn well please, she quotes William James as saying, to miss the joy is to miss all. Pam writes, Taz's friends, that's her daughter who is now deceased, Taz's friends used to play a game with fortune cookies. They would break open their designated cookie, read the fortune, and add the phrase, in bed, at the end of it. For example, you will inherit an unexpected sum of money, in bed. Or, this Friday will be an exciting time for you, in bed. Well, you can imagine the giggles and excited red faces that this provoked in a gaggle of junior high girls. Tosha Silver, author of Outrageous Openness, suggests replacing in bed with a different phrase. To any complaint, such as, I'll never have enough money, or I just can't find the right guy. For example, she adds the phrase, without source. As lesson 302 tells me, without source, the source energy, the creative energy, all that is, God, light, love, the dude, whatever you want to call it, without that source, my complaints might have validity. But once I offer up my fears, my demons, my challenges to the source, light shines them away, and I realize they are but vain imaginings. With source energy, my complaints have no power. With source, I can do anything I damn well please. So that's the Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And we have about 50 minutes, as usual, to talk, entertain your comments or questions, get updates from you about what's happening in your young life, entertain topic suggestions. Our calling number again is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, I will see that you want to chat or make a comment or suggest a topic. And since nobody's raised a hand yet, I will proceed with commitment number 11 from the book 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. Commitment number 11, once again, is very much in line with the reality management worksheet process and all of the talk that we do, all of the teaching and experiencing and shifting in perception that we do in the Mindshifter support groups and on Mindshifter Radio. Commitment 11 is titled Sourcing Approval, Control, and Security. And the commitment above the line, the commitment that's conscious with this particular chapter, is I commit to being the source of my own approval, control, and security. So, of course, the commitment below the line is the opposite of that. I commit to living from the belief that my approval, control, and security come from the outside, from people, circumstances, and conditions. They discuss how human beings have three core wants. They believe that all three, all of the wants that we generate boil down to approval, control, and security. The point of this chapter is that all wants, regardless of their size, are actually just the three core wants showing up in a multitude of manifestations. They talk about one of their coaching clients, Jeff, and how he's renowned as one of the best investment professionals in the world, and he's a household name for those who read financial publications such as CNBC and others. A recent coaching call began with them asking, "What's currently got your attention?" And Jeff responded with the following, "This moment, what has my attention is," and then he lists six things. And all of these issues are really wants, as most of the issues are. "I'm angry at an IT initiative we have around the portfolio construction. Our legal department didn't get the filings. Teenager is doing poorly at boarding school. I don't think she's going to pass. I'm still not exercising, and I'm fat. One of our portfolio managers isn't really living our cultural values, and I think he might need to be fired. My wife asked her mother to join us on our trip to Paris next month, and I'm mad about that." So all of these issues really are just wants, and they reframe them this way. "I want a better portfolio construction system to be automated by the IT department." Or, "I want this fund launched this year." Or, "I want my kid to succeed in school." Or, "I want to be fit." Or, "I want our leaders to live our values." Or, "I want to be on vacation with my wife alone." All of our complaints, desires, dreams, issues, plans, goals, etc., are simply wants. Leaders and all people want a lot. Commitment 11 begins by identifying that all of these seemingly disparate desires or wants come from wanting approval, control, and security. Now, the core wants are approval, control, and security, and security is the most basic. At its root, wanting security is wanting to survive. Another word for security is safety. So we want to survive physically and not die. But from this deepest desire for physical survival comes a desire for security. We want financial security, occupational security, material and relationship security. The second core want is approval. Approval is the desire to be loved, liked, wanted, valued, appreciated, respected, belong, etc. The desire for approval comes from the desire to survive. Quite simply, at its most evolutionary core, if others approve of me, they won't kill me. Since survival is my deepest desire, then my strategy for survival is going to be to gain approval. And the third core want is control. If I can't gain security through approval, then I'll get it through control. If I can't earn your approval, then I'll try to control you and life itself. Wanting control is trying to make sure that everything in life goes the way I want. I try to control myself, the people around me, my circumstances, God, and everything else. I invest a significant amount of energy in my plan to control things. Our belief is that these three core wants are underneath every other want. So the question becomes, what is the core want driving any surface desire? And another fundamental question is this security, control, safety, approval, is it outside of me? Most leaders and most people believe and are deeply committed to the belief that what they want, whether it's approval, control, or security, really is outside of them. The out-there-ness is the belief that my approval, control, and security are dependent on someone or something other than myself. Put simply, I don't have it within me, and something or someone needs to give it to me. When I place this outside of me, I create searching outside of me for something I desperately want or I think I need. Unconscious leaders are in the trance of out-there-ness and if-only-ness, if only they would approve of me, if only I had more money, if only I had the right relationship. And one thing we highly recommend for the leaders we coach who desire to wake up from this common trance is to identify how the out-there nature that they create and the if-only phrases that they think and speak, how are those showing up in their life? This can be done by simply completing this sentence over and over again. If only blank would blank, then I would have approval, control, or security. You can start by simply making a list of things in your life you wish were different. Once you have the list, look underneath the issue to find the if only or the otherness. If only I would lose weight, I would have approval and security. If only I would quit making stupid mistakes, I would have control and approval. If only my clients would take time to listen to my presentation, I would have approval and security. If only my boss would give me a bonus, I would have security. Just a quick comment they make here. Most people that they coach start asking about happiness because they think that what they really want is happiness and that happiness is the core they want. But what they've learned in doing this work and coaching thousands of people is happiness for most people is the result of feeling that they have approval, control, and security. Our advice is to go below the desire for happiness and see which of the core wants is missing. According to Commitment 11, one thing that distinguishes conscious from unconscious leaders is where they are looking to meet their deepest needs, out there or in here. Most of the time when they explain this concept to leaders, leaders say, so you're saying there's something wrong with wanting approval, control, or security? And the answer is simple. There's nothing wrong with approval, control, and security. In fact, they're a part of life in every person and every leader. The issue is wanting it because wanting it immediately creates the experience within me that I don't have it. And if I don't have it within me, I go looking for it outside of me. If I don't have security, I'll try to get it by increasing my net worth. If I don't believe I have approval, I'm always seeking approval from the people around me. When I believe I lack control, I'm always seeking to control other people and circumstances and myself. Again, this is just what we've observed people do, because they believe they lack the core needs of approval, control, and security. The question they ask, all of us who want to be conscious, is what if I already have approval, control, and security? One of their mentors is Hale Dwoskin. Hale's a teacher of the Sedona Release Method. It's a very simple technique for dealing with wanting and suffering and seeking that comes from a belief in lack. One of their favorite quotes from Hale is, you cannot go anywhere to get what you already have, and you cannot do anything to become what you already are. You can't go anywhere to get what you already have, and you can't do anything to become what you already are. Now, this is directly parallel, in my perception, to the reality management worksheet, where it starts out at the top and says, look, our premise in this work is that your very nature is this energy of love and creation. You are whole and complete as you are. There's nothing of value that can be added unto you or taken from you. Your very nature, your human life, your very being is the energy of creation, the energy of love. And the goal of the worksheet is to remove any thought that you're less than that and dismantle any negative belief that you're less than that. And that's exactly what Hale Dwoskin is saying here when he says you cannot go anywhere to get what you already have, and you cannot do anything to become what you already are. So if you already have security, control, and approval, how does that change your life? What if everything that is worth being controlled is already completely under your control? What if you are and what you are is already totally secure and safe, and your survival is guaranteed? So in a real simplified way, all leaders at any moment are operating from one of two beliefs or experiences. People who believe they lack something and want it and are seeking to get it from someone or something outside of themselves, and or they're believing they are already whole, perfect, and complete, and they lack nothing. These people move in the world in a very different energy. Those who believe they lack move through the world from fear. Those who believe they are already whole, perfect, and complete, lack nothing, they move in the world from love and creativity. Well, that's what our reality management worksheet aims to do, to begin by reminding me of my true nature and then have me spell out what my mind is doing to create an emotion based on an interpretation of external life events, specify the thought I'm using to create that emotion that's less than love, watch how the machinations of my mind create a goal that needs to happen in order for me to be okay again, and cancel all of that. Remove the false belief that there's someone or something outside of me that needs to give me control or approval or security, and restore me to this awareness of my true nature as love. So, those who believe that they lack anything, control, security, approval, they move through the world from fear. And those who believe they're already whole, perfect, and complete move through the world from love and creativity. So at any moment, especially when you're upset and stressed, ask yourself, what do I want? Don't try to edit your answer or be mature about it. Just blurt it out. It's just what we do in the first three steps of the reality management worksheet. Ask yourself, could I welcome this wanting? This is that Sedona release method questioning. Asking these questions, could I welcome this wanting? Could I simply allow this wanting to be here just as it is? Another question from the Sedona release method. If I dig a little deeper, is this desire coming from wanting approval, control, or security? And the key here is to answer from your heart, not your head. You can't be wrong about your answer, and if you're not sure, just pick one. The next question, could I welcome this wanting? Could I just allow it to be here? The next question, could I let this wanting go just for now, just in this moment, as best I could? The next question, could I rest for this moment as someone that is beyond all wanting? Could I rest in this moment as someone that is beyond all wanting? This is almost exactly Richard Moss's work with his consciousness, his mandala of consciousness. Stepping into the center space of the now and letting the thoughts about the past and the future and the other and myself, letting those thoughts be for now and step into the moment, the present moment now. Could I rest in this moment as someone which is beyond all wanting? So in a nutshell, if everything in this moment in your life is actually whole, perfect, and complete, what if you're lacking nothing? Not just what if you believed you lacked nothing, which is the mind game, but what if your actual experience in this moment was that nothing was missing? How would you be? And this commitment suggests that there is nothing missing, no lack, no conscious leader's experience that this moment by moment, there is nothing they lack. And they recommend a meditation about being whole and complete in the moment. And there's more available at Sedona.com, S-E-D-O-N-A. And it is almost exactly the same kind of process as we go through in our reality management worksheet. And we have time for a conversation, 563-999-3581. We have about 30 minutes left. How can we support you? What does this stir up for you? What kinds of questions or comments? What is it? What would it be like to experience yourself as being whole and complete in this moment, lacking nothing? Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is the most amazing synchronicity, or it's just that what you're talking about is common to everyone. And if I get a mind shifter, which you gave me 2 days ago, it ends up being about what you've just been talking about. My mind shifter was, it is safe and healing for me to understand the depth and breadth of my resistance to working with Mira. And I started with my brain dump. It went for about half a page. And then a whole other something came in, which was, why am I doing this? Why have I been doing this? What is the point? I don't have to do these fearful thoughts, and I don't have to feel afraid that she's judging me if I'm boring her. I don't have to be afraid if I'm boring. I don't have to be afraid of anything. It was as if, and I questioned even my questions. I was thinking maybe this is an even more profound version of my resistance, that I'm now talking myself right out of doing this mind shifter. And so I just sat with it, both sides of it, thinking, well, is this, am I fighting Tim Hayes' thing, this mind shifter? Or did I suddenly get something? And I'm telling you, Dr. Tim, it hasn't been put totally to the test, but there has been a kind of peace settling over me. And as if no one needs to care about that, if I have a thought that Mira might judge me, it's because I'm in an attack mode myself, which is the Course in Miracles, and I've thought about that a lot. It's as if what I did was found that all of my questions and concerns were floating on the surface of an ocean, and I just decided to go down below it all. again, I don't know whether I'm just resisting or I'm saying this is no longer an issue. Now, when I get back with Mira on Tuesday, I might find that it's sitting right there. But even if it is, I can say, well, look at that, and still be underneath it or somewhere else so that it is not the issue anymore. So having you read this, these 15 points that you've been reading are amazing. And they are universal. They've got to be universal. They're probably all the result. I mean, those insecurities and doubts are all the result of the fact that we have, for however long, a lifetime, a separate body that we feel we have to maintain. But if it's true, in the, as the Course in Miracles says, that the separateness is just an illusion, it's not true at all, then all of those little protections and precautions and fears and everything aren't necessary, and they don't mean anything. So I know I'm not exactly asking a question. I'm just saying how amazing it is that you are sticking right to the point of that mind shifter, which might be everybody's ultimate mind shifter too. I mean, reworded in various ways, but still. So that's just a comment, I guess.
Well, and I agree with part of what you're saying. It doesn't really matter if the stuckness comes back. If you're enjoying a sense of liberation right now, just enjoy it.
Yeah. It's like a universal permission to be whatever I am, and I don't really even know what that is. But it's all right, all of it, at least for the time being. It's interesting that Mira has been working with me. She asked me, is there a time in your life, was there ever an event or a dream or any experience you had where you experienced complete peace, self-acceptance, acceptance of the world, of others, of your whole life, whatever that form that took? Well, immediately I thought of a dream I had had when I was pregnant with my son, and I've told you about this before. I went to bed feeling fat and ugly and out of control because I was pregnant and hungry all the time and eating what I thought was too much. We have a big family script of overweight people are sub something. Overweight people are not at the top of the heap or whatever. A lot of judgments. We ran this ballet school. Everybody had to be long and skinny. And if you weren't long and skinny, you were a second class citizen.
Unacceptable,
at the very
right.
Moment.
All right.
Yeah, unacceptable. So here I am going to bed, and I remember saying to you, I said a very sincere prayer. I just said, I need help. And we were at a retreat for Vedanta studies, and the chosen ideal, it's like a Christ figure, it was called Holy Mother. And I prayed to her. I felt an affinity for her anyway, and prayed to her and said, it wasn't even a prayer. It's like, I'm going to bed. I feel totally hopeless. Please help. I guess that's the prayer. Please help. And during the night, I had an extraordinary dream that left me in a state of complete bliss and freedom for 3 days. And then it dissipated, and I went back to my life remembering it and wondering why I couldn't keep it at that intensity, but I couldn't. But anyway, Mira was asking me about that, and this mind shifter you gave got me as close as I've been able to get to the way I felt waking up after that dream of being let off the hook in so many ways, released from all kinds of personal pressures and wants and expectations and irritations and everything. The mind shifter just didn't last that long before it kind of disintegrated. So, again, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm enjoying this very much right now, and the test will come in many ways later on. I'm just hoping I can sit on the Zoom thing, looking at Mira, and feeling as if whatever I do or don't do, whether I grow or not, it's like your patter thing. I give up all expectation to change or have anything else change right there. Such a great thing. So anyway, so I guess this is...
Well, notice how as soon as you do that and you start thinking about the future with Mira on the Zoom,
yeah,
you're not enjoying what arrived.
Right. I'm anticipating trouble again.
That's right. That's right. Just notice that. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
I'm out of the now, and I'm off into the future and anticipating problems.
Yep.
Isn't that interesting?
Right.
And in that moment, I'm back in the present.
Right. That's going to be the escape hatch, is the ability to step away and say, whoa, look at that. Just look at it. Just notice it. And so much, I've been noticing so much, but what's weird is I notice all the little negative voices, but I'm also noticing the wonderful things that have always been sitting there, probably. It's like if you do the work on one side of the coin, you're automatically going to get benefits on the other side of the coin. So
probably,
right? Right,
but
well,
it's all about at another level. It boils down very simply to: am I in the present moment, or am I projecting off into the future, or about the past? And
yeah,
in that moment, when I ask that question and I observe, then I become aware of what I'm doing in this moment. So I'm bringing myself back into present moment awareness.
Yeah.
And as I do that, and I'm not in touch with my true nature as this loving being and the extension of the creative energy and form, I just become aware of that. And then when I, let's say I instantly move into the present moment awareness and I feel better, great. But if I keep obsessing about those thoughts, then I can apply a tool to dismantle those thoughts.
Right.
Or to question them at a deeper level. I can either use the Byron Katie questions or the Sedona Release Method questions that we just read. And that, again, that brings me back into what am I doing with my thought right now?
Yeah.
Exploring it, seeing it for what it is, and then it's easier to release it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that Byron Katie in one of her books said, I walk into a room and I know everyone there loves me. They just don't realize it maybe right now. That would be, she's acknowledging that there might be a little voice that's saying, am I loved by these people? Am I acceptable? Am I okay? But she has overridden it with the conviction that they do love her and she loves them. They just may not know it right now. That seems like a wonderful little mental exercise.
Listen to the word conviction. What she's talking about is not a conviction.
Okay.
Because that's a thought process. That's a belief. That's like what we're talking about in this lesson. Leaders believe that they don't have acceptance, approval, and security, and they have to find it from outside of themselves. What you're talking about and what Byron Katie talked about in that book is that it's not a thought. It's an experience. she's had that awakening, and she understands our true nature. She feels it. She experiences it. And then there may be times where her thoughts question it, and she doesn't need to go there anymore because she's learned she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts.
Right.
So she doesn't have the conviction that these people love her. She had the experience. The felt sense, the no holes barred, living in that direct experience of her true nature and theirs. And so she doesn't get distracted when what they're doing with their energy would seem to send a different message, because she knows it's not true.
Yeah.
She sees the truth of them and herself. She experiences it and feels it. That's dramatically different than having some thoughts or convictions about being loved or being loved by others. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. The way it was worded, well, I don't remember how it was worded in the book, except that she said what you just said. Maybe they don't realize it right now, but I know it. I know it, and she's comfortable and at home in her knowing.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a conviction. It's not a thought process. It's the felt sense knowing. It's having the direct experience of her nature and theirs.
That's good. She didn't use the word conviction, but I translated it to that, didn't I? So that's good. Yeah, one of the many amazing things about her is that she has never lost. It appears, maybe she has lost, I don't know, but it seems as if she spends most, if not all, of her time in that state of knowing. Yeah, that's a huge difference between having an experience and losing it and being able to sit with my eyes shut and remember it, but can't get there again.
Well, that is, you know, what so many of our great spiritual teachers tell us, is that our desire to get back to that enlightened state blocks us from getting there.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
So what, you know, then the conscious logical mind says, well, then it's helpless and I'm lost. But here's the simple solution. Just notice that I'm desiring something other than what is, and in the moment where I notice it, I bring myself back into the present moment more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the present moment isn't quite that experience. It isn't as luscious as that.
No, but it can be when I'm not distracting myself from it. There's another one of these commitments that talks about a commitment to being, and commitment, the next one in line is a commitment to experiencing that I have enough of everything. I have enough, and not thinking I have enough, have the experience. And this, again, goes right back to Richard Moss's work with the mandala. Step into that center, breathe, notice that your heart is pumping, your breath is moving. In this moment, as you're alive, even if you're thirsty, you still have enough. Even if you're hungry, you still have enough to be in the experience of having enough. And because that's the truth in every moment. I don't have everything I want in every moment, but I have enough. I am in existence. I am awake. I am aware. And the more I step into that experience, the more this other thing that you might be chasing, that experience of, you know, the grandness of all life or connected to oneness or whatever you want to call it, that is much more likely to arise again when you're not distracting yourself from what is in this moment.
That is so true. It's as if we make an idol out of coming back to that experience rather than just letting everything go so that we can really be present.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh.
And so the minute we go chasing after something we don't have, and we go chasing after something that we remember that we had in the past and we want to recreate it, we create the actual roadblock to achieving it. Think about the quote from Hale Dwoskin. You cannot go anywhere to get what you already have. You cannot do anything to become what you already are. And what's the beginning of the worksheet process? Our true nature, our very being, is this energy of love.
Mm.
That's all you could ever want, because that's all there is in the universe.
How then does, in the course of love, she talked about desire. How does that fit in, unless the desire is to be totally present?
Well, because we're in the realm of words, and we have all of these meanings and loadings and emotional baggage for words. But if you look at lesson four in the Way of Mastery, and remember that in the Way of Love, it's very much the same consciousness that's giving you the Course in Miracles, the Way of Mastery, and the Way of Love. So they may not be identical, but they're very, very similar. And so the entire lesson of lesson four in the Way of Mastery is titled Following the Thread of Desire. And the whole chapter is this, it's really confusing for the Western mind, because desire, that's bad. We shouldn't desire. That's selfishness, that's et cetera, et cetera. And so I came to say, this erupted out of me in one support group where people were rebelling against this chapter. And I said, listen, if you want to get the sense of what they're talking about in this chapter, every time they use the word desire, substitute the following phrase. Here's the phrase. The energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in this moment. That's what they're talking about as the energy of desire. Not my egoic wants. Not my passions, my obsessions, not my cravings, not my judgment of not having enough. So you'll get much closer to what that chapter's about, as far as I'm concerned, if you read lesson four from the Way of Mastery, and every time the word desire is there, substitute the phrase, the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in this moment.
Good. Good.
And that should help clear
Thanks.
Up what you just were talking about and the difficulty with the Way of Love and what they talk about in there.
That's good. Good.
And it's so subtle that they give us exercises in that lesson four in the Way of Mastery. Get up in the morning and, before you get going, just get a piece of paper and have it there by the side of your bed and a pen, And then just clear your mind and ask yourself, before you, you know, get off busy with your day, just ask yourself, what do I want to do? What do I have a desire for right now? Go back to bed, have sex, go look at the kids while they're sleeping, go off to breakfast, you know, rage at my neighbor who just made a noise that woke me up before my alarm, whatever it is. Just notice it and then make a note and then take a breath, clear your mind and ask again, okay, what do I desire in this moment? And what? And so it's an exercise to start tuning into this very subtle energy that moves through us. And what they talk about is how so many people have been conditioned that their wants or desires are bad, selfish, etc. And so they don't trust that energy. They've tuned it out. They've, you know, confused it with what their egoic obsessions and cravings are. And and at one point they talk about how people will go into prayer and say, you know, dear Lord, you know, Jesus, help me understand what's best to do. And then all of a sudden they'll get an urge to go get a vanilla ice cream. And they'll think, oh, that's bad. I distracted myself. Well, what if that's the energy of creation saying, hey, look, go get a vanilla ice cream. And on the way there, you're going to meet somebody. Or in the ice cream parlor. Or as you're leaving, you're going to meet somebody, and your life is going to unfold in a way that will help answer the prayer you just made. But no, we say no. Mm-hmm. No, I can't follow that urge. I can't follow that energy. And it's
right.
All because we've been conditioned to distrust it or label it as bad or wrong or selfish. And so the entire chapter in Lesson 4 is about undoing that negative conditioning for that energy and letting us slow down and tune into it sans judgment, right, without any comparison or judgment. And it coaches us to just do that exercise and write that stuff down and understand we don't need to act on any of those energies. We can write that list and do it 7 or 8 times, and then get up the next morning and do it 7 or 8 times, clear my mind, take a breath, and what do I want now, and then write it down. And then over time, if I do that 7 or 8 or 9 days in a row, where each day I've let myself think, what do I want now, and then write it down, and then clear my mind, and what do I want now, and just done that 7 or 8 times, now I've got about 50 different urges or desires, and at the end of 7 or 8 days, I look back and I start reading through what I wrote, and I start to see patterns and connections I never imagined. But they come outside the conscious, logical, figuring it out mind. They come through that flow of the energy of creation trying to express uniquely through me in this moment. They come through insight, intuition. And as you know, most of us have been conditioned not to trust our insight or intuition or even think about it.
Yep.
So that hope that clears up something, because that whole thing about desire and craving is just so distorted and so judged in so many cultures, especially the Western cultures.
Right.
And people are living immersed in shoulds.
Mm-hmm. Right. That is very helpful. Thanks. I have another question, Dr. Tim. It's a quick one, I think. ADHD, the diagnosis. I was talking to Michael about it yesterday on the radio show, and he was saying a person with ADHD is acting in response to maybe not even aware, but trauma. They're afraid to stop for any length of time and focus on one thing because they don't feel safe, so they skitter from one thing to another, and they get the diagnosis that they can't concentrate on anything, but it's because they're afraid. I just wondered if you, in my grandson's case, this sounds so true, and yet who knows what else is going on. But I wondered if you have ever thought of that, or if you worked with somebody with ADHD that managed it well or got over it or anything like that.
Well, you know, my initial response is the range of people that get the diagnosis of attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity
mm-hmm.
is broad. It's a big range
okay.
of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so while it might be entirely valid that this description or of the dynamic that causes that Michael Rice gave you might be entirely valid for some people, it's certainly not the full range of people that get that diagnosis. Some of
okay.
these people have dysregulated central nervous systems. Some people are creative, and they were never meant to sit in a chair in a school. They were meant to be out in nature exploring and working with their hands. And, you know, it's all kinds of people get that diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them simply have, you know, an underdeveloped cerebellum. And so they're trying to rely too much on their conscious logical mind to do repetitive tasks. And some
mm-hmm.
people have actual, you know, inflammation in the body and the brain that causes the symptoms that are labeled as psychological and psychiatric. So it's a far more complex thing than simply, you know, that people can't slow down. That is probably a primary factor for some people. But the range of people that get that diagnosis is far more varied than that simplified
mm-hmm.
answer.
Okay. That makes sense.
And as people explore solutions for those various people based on their specific situation, they find all kinds of different things that help, modifications that help.
Mm-hmm.
And then that helps demonstrate, okay, this was part of the problem. This was part of the issue that was driving this symptom pattern. And then they don't
right.
have to guess. Because when they make the appropriate changes and the person functions at a different level or the person thrives in a different environment, then all of a sudden we say, oh, guess what? That label was just a word. It has nothing to do with the actuality of the person. You know, if you go over into Europe, you see these people that deal with kids all day, and they don't give them that diagnosis. But they've got a lot of the same behaviors, and they say, okay, well, what do we need to do differently for this child to give him or her a place to express their genius and their creativity and their movement? And then we haven't labeled them as defective. We're working with their unique genius. And they don't, you know, diagnose them and drug them anywhere near as much as they do in the West. And likewise, if they adapt the same program as we have here in the West, as they, you know, the gentleman I interviewed in Australia, he's in a panic. He's a retired politician, but he sees the problem that's happening when they're adopting the diagnosis and the label and the treatment with medications in Australia the way they did here in the U.S., and now it's an epidemic of prescribing these meds to kids, and it's not helping anybody. It's creating more and more problems. So I realize that we've reached the end of our time, so I appreciate the call here at the end. Thank you for that. I hope it was useful. I look forward to hearing how things go with you. Blessings. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I caught the last part of that. Good conversation and a good example of looking at what's driving the pattern instead of labeling it. Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome and deserving. Have a lovely show.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, October the 29th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Michael's outside. I'm going to dial him in as host here and take him his phone. So give me just a second. All right. And I'll invite you to go to our website. Well, that didn't let me dial in, so I'm not sure what went on there. So I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here button, which is in the upper left corner, or go down, scroll down the page, and there's a bullseye. And as I always say, both of those will take you to the same place, and that's where you'll find all kinds of tools. And I'm going to carry this phone out to Michael, so hold just one moment. And we'd like for you to press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. Just one second. Well, my apologies. I am not finding him. The man has disappeared. So we'll give him just a moment to realize it's time, and he'll come our way. And in the meantime, press 1 and talk to us. Sound a little out of breath. Excuse me there. We have the baby today, and I will tell you ahead of time that Monday it's going to be a little hectic here in Virginia, so I'm going to get Tim to play a pre-recorded show. Dad actually has 2, possibly 3 different doctor's appointments Monday, and we have Aria. So I told Michael he could choose which baby he wanted to take care of for the day. And so I think he's going to keep Aria here, and I'm going to be taking Dad running around to all the different places, so hold the space. He lost another tooth last night, and that makes it challenging because he's 89 and they don't need to go to all the expensive crowns and all those things, so I'm not sure what they'll do with him. And then he's had some places pop up on his nose and behind his ear, so he's going to a skin doctor. And then he has glaucoma, so he's got to go to an eye doctor. So hold the space for all of us as we travel through Monday. It's going to be a little bit full and a little bit challenging. Gives us opportunities to do the work. And also hold the space for lady who our website is hosted on her server, and she's the one that's helping me make some changes to the website. And hold on. I've already dialed you in, Michael. And unplugged my phone. All right. I just caught my phone on the edge of the desk and unplugged it. So, yeah, it's crazy here today, too. But anyway, hold the space for Susan. Her mother is going through chemo, and so she's kind of got her plate full, too. So the changes that we were expecting to already have made to the shopping cart on the website have not been done yet. So we will get to that. Just be patient with us. Lots of changes taking place. Like I said, lots of opportunities to do our own work around the things that it triggers. And so Michael is now in the house. I'm not sure that he's unmuted the phone yet. We'll give him just another moment. But please press 1, and let's have a conversation. We had an awesome conversation the last couple of days with Ellen, and I'll be combining those two. Probably do that over the weekend when there's a few less things on the plate and get them combined and put in the special MP3s of radio shows, because she went through an awesome process. Started out simply as her cat being missing, and it just escalated like the hydras always do and uncovered several areas of deep process. And so we're going to put that into the special shows. Like I said, it'll probably be sometime over the weekend before I get that done, but you'll be able to find those. When you click on either the Start Here or the Bullseye, and you scroll down, there is a button. It's like three or four down, and it says special MP3s pulled from shows with instructions and testimonials and support. So you'll be able to find it in that group. And that's worth listening to over and over again. And we thank you, Ellen, for giving us that example. It's perfect. And so we didn't get to the reading. So Michael will be going back to reading in the book today. And I
yes.
think I just heard his phone click. So welcome.
Welcome, everybody. Been running a little bit, working in the garden once again, getting it ready for winter. Frost still hasn't hit here, fortunately, so things are still in pretty nice shape, and the lettuces and the kale are loving the cool weather. So. Reading. You mean like as in reading? Why is this happening to me again? Well, let's start out with a definition. And if I were to define the word for you as a tool of communication, would that be a reasonable definition that, you know, pretty much everybody could agree with? And I always get a yes on that. Yeah, that's reasonable. And when words are being used, obviously they are indicative of an interaction between two. In this case, you're being kind enough to listen and I'm speaking. So we're using words. And if words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, I invite you to notice that in your head right now, there are words running. And they're not being spoken to me or anybody else in the room or anybody else. If words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, my question for you is, who's in there with you? Who's telling you what anything means? And notice that for virtually everything you experience, your mind has words for it, a story. And I would offer that stories come from the past. And who's in there with you is telling you something out of your past, which may or may not be true about the present moment. But we can know for sure that it's not the experience of the present moment if it's coming from the past. Hence, the chapter title of this chapter, number 21, Waking from the Has-Been. Oh, yes, we have a bin of words and meanings and stories, all from the past, and when those words are triggered into action or activity, if there's no true communication between people, no real interaction where people are able to be responsible for the output of their own minds and the words they speak, and you know, that part of the commitment that says, I'll keep communication open. So words are the tools of communication, and has been is the mind, carbon-based memory, from the past. And we've been talking with Richard about healing crisis and that the symptoms of healing happen when we're ready to process through something from the past that does not serve love at this moment. Those energetic patterns are going to surface, and we're going to get to move through them. And we move through them, the energies that are moving are going to reproduce the symptoms of the past. So now we link that healing process with the has-been. So I offer to Richard, in each healing crisis, you will have the opportunity to question different realities fed to you by your mind. It's a chance to review and make decisions based on principles rather than on having to accept and be directed by whatever realities happen to be triggered in you. So Ellen gave us a wonderful opportunity the day before yesterday when she called in and is dealing with the loss of her cat. But the has-been was telling her stories. She ultimately discovered when she engaged in the forgiveness process, was telling her stories from her early childhood and things that she had locked out of her mind and didn't want to deal with. And I just felt like it was just so skillful and so beautiful the way she picked piece by piece by piece and just went through that process. If you weren't on the show the day before yesterday and yesterday, it's a really powerful piece of healing that she did. And not the kind of healing that the average person's going to do the first time they touch into the tools. There's a certain skill level involved in being able to be aware and being able to decode what's going on in your own mind from the past. The reason for doing this, even though it appears you're experiencing a present moment through your mind, is that all experience from the human mind is from the past. You know, you've heard us say it very many, many, many times. You've got to be out of your mind. Carbon-based memory is a function. It's a function of information stored in brain cells being resonated into activity. Now, if everything that's stored in the mind, obviously if it's stored there, it was there before this instant, it's from the past, then can that past give you an actual present moment experience? Or do we need to wake up from the past? The present moment cannot be experienced through the mind. I can't even relate to that, says Richard. How else can I experience life but through my mind? Obviously, what comes from my mind is the present. Richard appeared to be in resistance to a new idea again. Recall the analogy we used of the two-dimensional creature? She assured us that a basketball was a series of flat planes experienced over time, right? So you remember an example we used earlier? We have this two-dimensional creature that only has length and width, no depth, no height in her experience. And so when we pass a basketball through her space, she experiences the first edge of the basketball and each successive slice of the basketball until she experiences the last slice of the basketball. She doesn't experience the basketball as one singular object. She experiences it as a series of flat planes separated by time. You and I experience a basketball, just no time involved, it's just a basketball. But if she experienced the first edge first and the last edge last, obviously she just invented a thing called time. Maybe time isn't true. Maybe time is just something we made up for convenience. So how did we finally get her to see the basketball as it is? She had to question everything, including her own experience. It was not until she did that the possibility of an experience opened to her. It is amazing how many people want to change but refuse to think or act differently. Oh, yeah, I want everything to be different, but let me play out my old power person dynamics over and over and over and over again. Don't make me look at them. Don't make me look. Don't force me to question. And by God, if you do, I will force you to shut up in a minute, in a New York minute, as opposed to, oh, we're keeping communication open. How about if you were to look at this? Would that, well, no, that's not true. Then it's not true. But if it is, and you can't look at it, can you ever change what you say you want to change? And you'll notice that if you're in a why is this happening to me again experience, that your mind has always got a picture world that you can blame it on, because the mind is expert at massaging the things from the past to look like our brain's image of the person that's in front of us and think that our disease is caused by them. Until we recognize that the past is the past and there is no future in the past, we're going to tend to replay those dynamics over and over again. And the key to healing is to recognize that when a pained perception surfaces, you want to look deeper rather than push away any communication that forces you to look. If your words to somebody are, don't say another word, what that really means is, don't make me look. I don't want to go there. But you say you want to change it. You want to change it, but you're not willing to go there. And to go there lovingly, gently, and respectfully, not out of your old habits of rage or fear or guilt or grief or, you know, whatever. Whatever. Oh, I can take a breath. Oh, you can actually talk to me about those things. I can actually open those parts of my mind and take a look at the ones I say I want to change, but I'm never going to look at because there's too much pain there. Well, there might be a healing crisis there. But as Ellen saw, when she was able to cancel the goals involved, when she was able to actually listen and follow directions, she could cancel the goals involved and find those old painful parts, bring them forward in the presence of conscious, active, present love. And what happens is they're automatically de-energized. Healing happens. All it takes is a willingness to go there and look and notice that your hostility is a signal that says, not you're doing something bad, but I don't want to go there. I don't want to look at. No, I want to be able to do these behaviors that have produced all these horrific results in my life in the past, but I want to keep doing them, but I want my present to be different. And no, I don't want to look there. You know, we have to look in the has-been, making it safe. It's safe and healing to look in the has-been, in the storage system that we call carbon-based memory. One of the ways of keeping things locked away out of awareness is by holding the breath. So if you ever notice yourself holding your breath, that's the time to stop and look and take a breath. And what will happen is the energy that the breath is holding down will start to move. And you'll get to start to move through it. And if love is present, you'll be processing it. Remember, our definition in this work of processing is the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love surfaces, or have somebody in the space who can hold that space for us. So in that case, someone else can process us. When there's something I can't hold love present for in my mind, then another can hold to that space for me as that part of my mind opens and healing happens. It's a powerful place to be. And you've got to stop believing what's in the has-been. You've got to stop believing what the mind massages into. Looking like something else other than what it is. And this information is stored in physiology. If you talk to a modern-day physiologist, you know, living in the mind of active present love in the ancient teachings was on just a simple practical level, nothing religious about it, but it was called living in the mind of Christ, the mind of active love. It's our birthright to live in that mind. And obviously, if there's something that's going to inhibit that or stop that, we would call that the anti-Christ. Where is that stored? You know, we have a dozen people in a room and somebody comes in the room and does something that everybody agrees is terrible. And you look and everybody in the room points at them and says, you made me, and one person's feeling angry and one person's feeling sad and one person's feeling afraid, one is ranting and raving and another one is running out the door in terror. If in fact that person's action were what caused anything that happened for anyone, it would have caused the same thing to happen for everyone. Why was it different for each person? Because the has-been, the content of the has-been, was different for each person. And the trauma stored in one's own has-been is the only thing that can create trauma for you. Now, if we talk to a modern-day physiologist or physicist and we say, analyze this body for us, on the level where analysis of what is thought of as matter happens, they would say the base element of your so-called body is carbon. Now, if you look into the carbon atom, you find that there are 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. Does the number 666 sound familiar? Carbon-based memory, the has-been, is where the dynamics of the anti-love, the anti-Christ mind lives. And it's been going on for most people for many, 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 many generations. And it's time to stop re-energizing it and allowing it to come forward in the presence of love for dissolution, for forgiveness. And to recognize that the thing that causes those things to come forward is that we hold a goal that causes the mind, that through resonance causes the mind to use certain data to produce its construct, its perception. Perception is always a reflection of what's held in physiology. If perception is pain, physiology is disease. If physiology is diseased, perception will be pained. So when painful perception comes up, we can do one of two things. We can say, look what you did to me, and massage our perception to make it look like what's going on inside of me is caused by someone else. Or I can stop and recognize, oh, something painful is moving in me. What resonated into activity? I have a goal. And I always have control over the goal. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shabag or shabak, and it literally means to cancel. So our goals are the thing that resonate or drive the process of perception. And if perception is pain and you want to get out of it, what you do is you cancel the goal so it collapses. And when it collapses in on itself. When it collapses in on itself, it gives you access to the root content, the core issue around what's creating the pain. And when I can bring that forward in the presence of active love, I get freed of it. So that's another way of saying, expressing what this work is about and where we're headed with it all. And the skills and the tools that we're supporting and offering are those of being able to collapse those old has-been realities, the ones that have been going on for, in many cases, generation after generation after generation, collapsing those, freeing ourselves from those, and dropping into a different level of the mind where that core information is stored, that core energetic pattern is that needs to be healed. And so in essence, that's the core of what we're about doing. And you're delighted that you're here to do it with us. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number, if you have a question or a thought, you want to share something, ask for support. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show on your phone. And then if you push 1, through the magic of technology, a hand will go up in the control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. So if you're out there with a question or a thought for us, push 1. Let's have a conversation. Machini, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anything happening in the phone queue?
No, it is all quiet. Nobody has a hand up. So somebody press 1. Let's have a conversation. We have 35 minutes.
Hey, we've got lots of time for conversation, lots of time to cover whatever territory you want to cover. you know, anything is fair game in the whole process of these tools, from the communication, did you hear what I think I said tool, to the healing through relationship commitment tool, to the forgiveness process, purpose, personal power and commitment. What arena do you need support in? How can we assist you and support you? Maybe we'll just do a silent meditation until a hand goes up.
Move your microphone just a hair. It's popping
okay,
back
so
with
popping
your breath.
Okay, is that better? I hope.
Yes.
Cool. So when I share with people the idea that perception collapses and it gives us access to the hidden part of the mind, there's a visual that I use, and I use it because everybody's been impaled with it so many times that most people are pretty numb to it at this point. But at the same time, it demonstrates in a visual way a really powerful insight into how collapsing perception by canceling goals, which is the forgiveness process, works, what it does in the process of doing that. And we all kind of had burned into our brains back on 9/11. One or either of the two towers collapsing in on their own footprint. Free fall speed, these huge buildings drop straight down into their own footprint. Well, that's what happens with perception when you cancel a goal. That perception that has been filtered through all different kinds of parts of the minds, and usually, you know, if I'm wanting to blame somebody else, I'm filtering it through my brain cells about them, and so the dynamic that I have going on internally filters through my brain's image of them, and my mind massages that information and builds a picture of them as the cause of my pain. But when I realize that I'm the one that's feeling my pain, then I realize, well, you know, it can't possibly be them because the pain's inside of me. So how do I get to it? When I cancel the goal, the perceptual, the end result perceptual construct has been massaged to look like whatever it's been massaged to look like. It collapses in on its own footprint. So I can drop back into, and you know, it always amazes me. I'm doing this forgiveness process for 4 decades with people and watching, you know. And again, Ellen, I thank you for your willingness the other day when Ellen canceled, you know, the first goal, the second goal, just to watch where, oh, that's what came up next. That's what it was at the root. That was in the footprint of that issue. And when we can take those hidden dynamics and bring them forward, when we're safe and we've got an open space within our mind, when our mind's not all busy with, nah, 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 I want this, nah, 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 I want that, I want that, I want that. I have to protect myself. I have to do this. I have to do that. When it's not busy with that, it gets quiet. Then, and that's what perception, that's what happens to perception when a goal is canceled. There's a space, there's a clean and open space in the mind where the underlying hidden dynamic that's at the root of that footprint can surface and be processed. And it's the key, the core of all healing. These dynamics are stored in physiology, and physiology doesn't heal until we're willing to deal with the dynamic that we're storing in physiology. We want to say, oh, there's a physical disease. But, you know, if you listen to Einstein, can there be such a thing as a physical disease if there's no physical? Einstein says this, on such things as matter, we've been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so low as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. If there is no matter, then there is no physical disease. There is what we call the physical expression of disease. There's what our minds create. But the dis-ease energy itself, if removed, leaves physiology back at perfection. As long as there's no distorted energy there, then physiology can move back into its natural, healthy state. It's the strongest inclination that this energy system has to always return to its original design. But, of course, each of us has choice. And if we decide, well, I'd rather have a disease energy, and probably not many people would say, I would rather have a disease energy, but they might say, well, I want to keep a little rage at hand so that if people get out of line, I've got a way to deal with them. Well, in essence, that's a statement that says, I want to hold on to a disease energy. So when that disease energy starts to move, perception, one view of the energetic dynamic, is pained, and physiology, the other end of it, the opposite view of it, shows some sort of a distortion or what we call dis-ease. And it's time for a dialogue. So if you're out there with a thought or a question, now's the time to push the button. Push one and let's have a conversation. How can we support you? It's time for us to turn the show over in your direction. Are you there with a question or a thought for us? How can we support you? If you haven't used the tools, go to our website, whyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, there's a button that says Start Here. Click the Start Here button, and it'll walk you right through everything we have on forgiveness. We have an app.
We
you
have
can go to your app store. Go ahead, sweetie.
I was just going to say we have several numbers on the switchboard today that I don't recognize. So if you're new to this work and you have a question, please ask it.
Yeah, check in, say hello, introduce yourself. If you're shy and you don't want to use your real name, pick a fake name. Use an alias, that's okay. Say hello, what do you know of this work? What's got you interested? Where did you find the work? How is it impacting you? And or do you need some guidance as to how to use it? Again, go to the website, and the website is WHY. Again, that's the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me? Again, the first word and the last word of the title, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a button that says Start Here. Click on the Start Here button. And it will walk you through the most important tool we have. The tool of forgiveness. There are radio shows where either myself or Dr. Tim or Jeannie have walked people through the forgiveness process. There are links to worksheets, a variety of different worksheets. You can do the forgiveness process right there on the website, or you can print the worksheets off at home and use them as you choose to, fill them in, pen and paper. And or if you're a digital person, the world's only forgiveness app exists in your app store. If you type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Miss Jeannie created it. I don't know, how long ago is that, Jeannie? 3 years ago? 4 years ago now? And
yeah, a little
it's
longer
been updated
than that.
A couple of times since. A little longer than that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can.
And we have a hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello.
It's area code 417. I think this is Miss Judy. Welcome.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I have
hey
a
there,
question.
Young lady. Welcome. Awesome. How are things in Missouri?
Well, it's a little damp today, a little colder, but it's good. The air is clean.
Well, we've got some of the same. It's chilly and a little. They're calling for rain. It hasn't rained yet this morning, but or today. But it's supposed to.
Mhm. And everything is still green. Well, I was driving down to Ava yesterday, and I noticed that. Of course the evergreens line the road as you're going down there, but in the distance you could see
right.
All the other trees that were turning. So it's going to be a beautiful autumn in the Ozarks.
Cool. Well, last week, normally up in this area and up especially in the Shenandoah Valley, last week would have been the peak of colors, and but we haven't had a frost yet, so the colors are starting. It's getting a little colder at night, so we're starting to get some colors, but not a whole lot as yet. So we've scheduled next week to go for a drive and catch the colors, hoping that the leaves don't just get all knocked off by the rain and we don't get those colors. But
oh, yeah. I took a bunch of our sisters, the one I visit teach, one year. We all packed a lunch, and we took off to the Ozark Scenic Road back in the woods there. And, oh, it was beautiful. And we stopped for lunch, and then we continued on.
Nice.
And it was a wonderful journey. It'll be wonderful.
Cool. Sweet. So what's happening in your world?
Doing a lot of worksheet. The last mind shift that you gave me, I've done over, 200 worksheets on that one. And
wow.
One of the worksheets that I have done lately, it's like I'm a little adventurous with these worksheets. And I got to the part where I was asking Heavenly Father to restore me to His love, the pure love of God. And I thought, well, Jesus said I could ask for anything. Why don't I ask for something more? And so I said, well, I'm going to try that. And so I wrote down, please restore me to prosperity and good health and family and friends. And I just made a long list of stuff I'd like to be totally restored to. And I felt pretty good afterwards, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could ask for all of that on one worksheet. And I thought, well, I'll just ask Michael what he thinks about that.
Well, you know, I don't think there's a limit in the Creator's mind. The only limit would be what our mind is capable of holding, seeing. And, you know, oftentimes we become focused on the things, I'll just leave it at that, where if you listen to Yeshua, what he said was, actually, there's something else you need to seek first. And the words the Greeks translated that passage as were that you're supposed to seek first the kingdom of heaven, which it's like, how nebulous. Like, well, what does that even mean? It's meaningless. But if you get to his Aramaic words, he said, seek the community of love. And then, once we allow ourselves to be restored to that, the truth of who we really are, then everything else gets handled. If we're looking for everything else, but we're out of harmony with that one, in other words, we're holding on to this hostility toward that one and this fear of that one and this rage at the other one and this grief and condemnation and gossip and slander or whatever, if we're holding those things in front of that which he said has to come first, like it's like the protocol. You know, if you go to a doctor and the doctor says, well, I know exactly how to cure that disease, here's what you do, and you go home and say, well, that sounded good, but I think I'll do it this way. If you don't follow the protocol, it's probably not going to happen. And his protocol was seek first to, in essence, be a member of the community of love, to function as love. And when you can't, there's where the forgiveness work needs to be done. All those other things that the mind says, I want this, I want this, I want that, I want that. Because we're now in the energy of the cause of those other things, they're automatically handed to us. But if we're in the energy of the cause of a trauma-based life, if we're in the energy of the power person, if we're in the energy of the generations, then even if we ask, you know, if you go back here, there's a passage, I think it's in James, and he says, people do not receive because they do not ask aright. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, obviously the brain cells representing the color of your car fire. If I say, speak or tell me about the last time you had a goal for someone to honor and cherish you and they didn't, what happened? And the average response to somebody, well, you know, I had such and such and I really wanted them to honor and cherish me. And when they didn't, I went into such a fit of rage and I hurt so much. I went home and I cried and I was in such pain. So what that tells me is in the file, so to speak, in the mind of the person who wants to be honored and cherished, if they weren't being honored and cherished, they were in pain and trauma, then in that part of the mind is pain and trauma. So because the mind operates by the law of resonance, if I say, send me someone to honor and cherish me, but what's in my mind, the file in my mind on being honored and cherished is pain and trauma, that energy passes through the pain and trauma, and what radiates out from me is, send me somebody to bring me pain and trauma. Until I go in and clean up my personal pain and trauma, my generational patterns, my asking for beauty and wonder will be overtaken by what my mind holds that goes against beauty and wonder.
So perhaps if I worded it like something to the effect of restoring me to thy love and open my heart to be restored to through love.
Mm-hmm. Check out the
worksheet. To the family and the friends and the community and the neighborhood and so forth.
Yeah.
To open me up.
So if you go right to the worksheet, it's
to embrace them.
Exactly.
And then
to stand in that space.
So then towards the end of this, when I'm asking to be restored to the pure love of God, I have thought many times and even done it to restore us instead
mm-hmm.
of just me, us, the situation
yes.
to the pure love of God.
I'm with you.
Okay. So I was just really curious about that because I've run across it. It's surfaced a couple of times, maybe three times on this asking, you know, for what you need, because I usually don't ask for very much, but not in that realm anyway. But and I thought that if I ask, you know, I'm asking.
Right. And it sounds like you're moving into a new depth of comprehending what that really means.
I hope so.
That's
a lot of work.
Well, yeah, cleaning up the generations is some amount of work, no question.
Michael, I had no idea when I started this work. I had no idea what I was getting into. But with doing genealogy, I can see back through the generations and the patterns. And then now I'm seeing like one, two, three generations after me. These patterns are surfacing. And I'm working like not as hard as I should have been, but I'm diligently working on it now. And these patterns are still surfacing in like three generations later, and I'm like, oh, well, that one made it past, though. We have one family that made it past it, and so they say it takes about four generations to weed it out. So I'm waiting for there's my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, so it'll be my great-great-grandchildren to be able to move past all of this.
And
for
you set the pattern for the healing as you do it. You set the pattern in the genes that's going to support them in doing the healing work that it takes to be fully restored.
Amen.
You know, there's that story of the man who the statue of David, you know, supposedly one of the most beautiful pieces of art in history, is on display, and Michelangelo is there, the man who did that statue of David, and the man just looks at it, and he's just so enthralled with it. He turns to Michelangelo and says, how did you do that? And he said, well, I looked at the piece of granite, and I saw Michelangelo in there, and I removed everything that wasn't Michelangelo.
You mean David?
David, pardon me. Michelangelo saying everything that wasn't David.
and
so,
that's how,
yes.
That's how they...
Removing everything that isn't Judy.
Yeah.
That isn't Michael. Yeah.
And that's what they used for the holy vessels whenever they carved them out of the granite. And the rocks is that they take everything. It's a pure cut. It takes out everything that isn't pure, and whatever's left is pure, and that's what they drink out of. In the movie The Chosen, it was talking about the vessels that Jesus had turned the water into wine. The vessels that he requested, they pour the water in, and it was just like that.
Pure vessels.
Yeah. Yes, pure vessels. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate both of your inputs. I know, Jenny, do you have anything to say about that? I know she's really got a lot of work.
I think that you and Michael covered it really well there. You know, he tells us to ask and we'll receive, but then like Michael said, you know, he says, seek ye first the kingdom, and all of that will be added to you. And so he's willing to give us anything and everything that we ask for. And so the only thing that's holding it back is us. You know, they can't give if. And someone can't give you a gift unless you're willing to receive.
So true. Well, it certainly has been enlightening. I appreciate both of your inputs, and I appreciate you being here for everybody. I just love, you know, whenever you all are talking and you're putting out the information and everything, I just feel, sometimes I feel like, oh, I just can't disturb them. You know, I got this question, but I'm going to wait, you know. And I, even though there's no one calling into the show, we're all intently listening, I promise you. And so I'm going to let you go and bid you adieu for the day, and I'll continue listening.
All right, and I suggest that you keep a little notebook, Judy, of questions as you're doing, you know, whether it's worksheets or mind shifters or whatever it is, keep a notebook, and then when the show comes on, put the question out, because it's the question that elicits the deeper information, you know, things that I've never thought of before. Somebody asks a question, it's like, oh, so now we can open that whole area of conversation. So that's why we're inviting participation. So thank you
appreciate
for your call
that.
And your thoughts and your questions. All right. Appreciate the work you're doing, holding the space.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All righty. Blessings. So we've got about 10 minutes left. So if you're out there in the phone queue listening, we'd appreciate hearing from you.
We have a hand.
What's
up.
Happening in your world, in your process? Let's speak to the hand.
727, I think this is Patrick.
Hi.
Patrick McGann, how are you, young man?
Really excellent. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. How do you be? What's happening in your world?
I'm excellent. Well, this morning I went to get an Epsom back from a friend, and it didn't work for him as far as they knew. But what was really interesting was because of the naturopathic training I took, especially from you, and understanding better than the naturopathic training I had at school. But understanding healing crisis, the lady had a shaking going on in her neck and head and thought it was from a vax reaction, you know, but it was when we went over and explained everything, and then I went ahead and worked on her some with some gentle, slow motion, myofascial work. And it actually started increasing because she already knew that symptoms and during release, it was like as if the energy now was ready to release, but it was hitting the blocks, and that's what was making the shaking, you know, trying to hold it all down, trying to hold it together over the years under extreme stress over and over and over. It was pretty neat because then they could release, and then for the first time, they came out the other side, and that was very nice. But the actual thought I had, that's what's been going on for me. And so I've really enjoyed assisting that person to open their flows and release, and they became, they were like kind of like a beautiful statue carved in ebony and kind of hard, and then they became a beautiful, soft, flowing, different kind of person afterwards. But what originally I thought about was our conversation last night, because I had a lot of judgments on when I was investigating different healing assistance things. My favorite is the Avacyn because it heats the blood up and it did the most for me. The first thing that did it was a beamer to get what I call emotion or energy in motion, which to me is life energy. It has to move. And if it doesn't, you have a stasis that's not life. And so, I know it just triggered something good. So I read a lot lately on, so the blood, that's why I like the machine, because it moves the blood. Both of them brought up things that need to be forgiven for me and assist me to do that,
right.
Both the beamer and the Avacyn. But then I had judgments against other formats that didn't work for me, and I didn't want to help people those ways because I thought, wow, those don't work that good. And I thought about what Jesus said when he went in his missing years over to India, and the healer said to him, some people, you give them this, and it's a poison. And other people, you give them this poison, and it heals them. Other people, you give them this, and it'll poison them. You know? So like everybody does something different. So it really helped me to release my judgments to a higher level. I consider forgiveness for me releasing belief systems, judgments, anything that makes me think of something negatively. So it was a beautiful opening. Another level of forgiveness automatically happened. And that was really nice for me, especially last night, to let go of my judgments. And I think the thing that I also had judged that bothered me was that people, not everybody is feeling, you know, some level of fear and et cetera, not just from the COVID times, but all the constant, what would I say, use of fear and expanding it on different networks of communication to where people are even in more fear and more fear and more fear, and which drives away from love, which is what we really are. And so to get back to it, I realized that anything, even if it didn't work, but the person believed in it and it took away their fear, brings them to love. So I'm very happy to know that. Yeah, that's it for me. That's all I have to say. Is anybody still there, or did I just...
Michael, if you're talking, Michael, we can't hear you.
Oh, pardon me. Pardon me, Patrick. I had my mute button pushed. I've been talking to you all along. My bad. But I'm with you. Yeah, if that love is present, that's where the healing happens. You know, oftentimes, in spite of the remedy used, healing happens because, you know, love is present. People can, you know, doctor can give this extremely toxic substance and say, well, this is going to heal you. And people's belief moves there, and the doctor's presence of love is there, and healing happens in spite of the toxicity. So. Yeah. It was actually a healer back, I'm not even sure, you know, maybe this was the 50s, and he wrote a book titled Anything Can Heal Anything. Anything can cause anything. And when you realize that we're creators, that statement starts to make sense.
Right.
And when we get to the core, we get to the really... hidden dynamic, the underlying energetic pattern that, you know, in many cases has been there for generation upon generation. and we're captive to it. But when whatever that root is opened and exposed to love, that's when the transmutation, the real healing happens. Otherwise, people are chasing symptom treatment.
One of the things that brought up for me working with this lady was that we talked about diagnosis being, if it's given wrong, instead of just information like, okay, neuritis means just I have a nerve that's irritated and inflamed. And neuralgia means it travels a little bit. But it's like when you go in that language and someone with a strong consciousness with the patient not knowing what they're talking about says, well, you have torticollis, you know, like you're stuck if you buy that. And through talking with the person, I was able to untie the diagnosis or the witch doctor thing, that they were holding a lot of fear and energy around it. And then once that was done, then we laughed about it. Then they were able to release a tremendous amount of a fear overlay created by that. And other things could then move. So sometimes people transfer negative, sometimes they transfer love. Fear or love.
Yeah. Well, that's one piece of the puzzle that the Greeks really did have. They said, guard the portals of the mind. Be careful what you let your mind engage in, because that's where that creative flow happens. That's where that creative power is, for sure. And I love to break down the word diagnosis. You know, what's the root of that word is agnostic, which means I don't know, as an agnostic. And a dyad is two. Diagnostic is two who don't know. And you can bet if you go to 20 different diagnosticians, you'll get at least 10 different diagnoses, 10 who don't know. But, well, we got a guess. And if you get people who make a good educated guess, you know, you might make some breakthroughs and get some openings. But if you ultimately do the work of moving through your own, you know, each of us moving through our own unconscious dynamics, that's where the most reliable true healing happens. And it happens, as you say, from that active presence of love.
Yeah. I like it.
For sure.
An interesting healing that happened to me. One friend of mine knew about all the bad things that were going to happen in the United States and all the things that are advertised. About 6 years at a time, moved out of the country, and then put that into me. You heard it. Everybody heard it. And it was really, really like, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. You know, this planet's had it. And just get off the planet and never come back because it's lost. And it drove me down, till I couldn't go, you know, yin and yang. You got to come back the other way. So I said to my friend, I said, you know, heck with it all. I said, you know, I've died lots of times. I'm going to die now sometime or another. So what's the difference? I'm going to give up all this fear. Just, hey, even suffering. I've suffered plenty, so who cares, you know? So then now I've gone back to celebrating the enjoyment and the beauty of life. And so my friend to pushing me down into those fears so I could come out the other side and let him go was a good thing, and a weird kind of healing, but, Lord. Anyway.
Doing one's own work is definitely key.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, appreciate you. Have a blessed one, and we're down to the last minute, so I'm just going to say thank you to everybody, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org. AGAIN.org.